Hello, people. Simon Madden here. Welcome to another episode of Simon Says. And I am really privileged to have, the man with the long name, but we'll just call him by his well-known short name, Richie Vass, who's, he's an exponent, I think, originally of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's a mixed martial arts expert. He's a big wave surfer, and as one of the original bra boys from Maroubra Beach. And so, Richie, welcome.
Thanks for having us on, boys. Simon, thanks for having us. And, looking forward to having a little gas bag.
That's great. Well, as you might know, this started last year in COVID, and it was great. I couldn't get out in Melbourne, so we decided to, reach out to people and have a chat about their success and failures and what they're doing, et cetera. So, and I thought, we haven't had enough people from Sydney. Now, you're a man who's well-known in the mixed martial arts area. And you're a surfer, so would you clout, not just a surfer, but a big wave surfer. Which one came first? Were you into martial arts first or were you into surfing?
Yeah, I was definitely surfing, mate. From as far back as I can remember, all I ever wanted to do was be in and around the water at the beach. I just surfed mad from such a young age. My uncle was a surfer. He lived up at Avalon and he would take me surfing. And I lived just outside of Maroubra, a place called Little Bay, and my mum joined me up to the Nippers down at Maroubra just to get me more comfortable around the ocean. She was a bit more relaxed, I think, about it too. All I want to do was surf, and that's pretty much, all I want to do. I'm still madly in love with the sport. It's a great lifestyle, but along the way, I sort of fell into martial arts, and it was kind of to stay fit for surfing, really, especially when I started to focus on big wave surfing. Training and staying fit was a priority, and I found boxing and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as a great way to achieve that. But then I found myself competing in those combat sports and found my way to MMA.
So what age were you when you started? When you say you stood on a board by yourself and could surf a wave, how old were you?
Well, initially, my mum wasn't comfortable me riding a fiberglass board down at Maroubra, so we would only ride fiberglass boards up at Avalon with my uncle because he could be out in the water and looking after us. So I wasn't allowed to bring my fiberglass board down to Maroubra until I was about 10. So I'd say it was around 6 or 7, I reckon. I first stood up on a board with my uncle, pushed him into some nice little, foamy white waters up at Avalon. I got my feet on a big mall, and every opportunity we would, I'd get back up there and surf. And while I was down here in Sydney and Maroubra, I'd just be kicking around on my bodyboard, still loving being out in the ocean and catching waves. And then finally, Mum had enough, courage and confidence to bring the fiberglass board down. And then she joined me up to Maroubra Board Riders, who, she thought it'd be a great way to have more eyes on me in the water if all the local lads are near me. And that's what led me into just living and growing up in Maroubra.
Well, mate, I've got to give you credit because I reckon I tried surfing for about 2 minutes and nearly killed myself. So I said, it's not a sport for me. also, I remember going down to Trigger Brothers in Torquay when I was about 16, I was about 6.5 foot there, and I said, mate, have you got a board to suit me? And he looked at me, looked me up and down, went, mate, it's about 12 foot, you haven't got one yet, it'll cost you about $4,000. I went, oh, that's...
Yeah.
So that was not encouragement for me. Mate, so when you talk about the fitness, it's really interesting because I know for mixed martial arts, and you've done, and we want to talk about that a bit later, about the different competitions you've been in, but how... Compare the fitness for surfing, big wave surfing, and the fitness for martial arts. Similar or different? Or is it all about your lung capacity and your muscle strength? How do they compare?
Yeah, I mean, they're very different in many ways. With surfing, it's it is about lung capacity and it's about paddle fitness, and it is a different type of anaerobic and aerobic. In mixed martial arts, it's you explode and you can recover, and sometimes you've got to keep that high intensity going for a while. Where surfing, it's in shorter bouts and you can obviously rest and wait for the next wave and really recover. In mixed martial arts, it's a little bit more unpredictable because you've got your opponent who might want to push the pace or whatnot, and sometimes you don't have the option of just resting. You've got to keep going. So they are different in many ways in terms of fitness, but what's similar across the board is how you mentally approach it, especially in big waves, about not panicking, and when you're in a hairy situation, staying calm, working your way through it. That's what I found to have the most similarities. It's not so much the type of fitness, but the mental approach and how things can get out of control pretty quick, and the way you react to those situations. That's what I really found as a great crossover. And if you could be as fit as you want, you could be the fittest man in the world, but if you get caught inside and get smashed by some big waves and you panic, all that fitness doesn't count for anything. You know, your heart rate goes through the roof, your breathing goes all out of whack, and you find yourself in a pretty bad situation real quick. And it's the same inside the octagon. If you're, you could be a triathlon, like I said, again, the fittest person across the board, but you get hit a few times and you forget to breathe and you start to panic, well, then all that fitness goes out the window and you turn into just a beanbag. So, yeah, that's what I think is the most similarity between the both sports, is just staying calm in heavy situations.
No, that's a very good, because I suppose in a whole lot of sports, big times, I remember myself in a long time ago being in a situation where you have to keep calm. But like that in the octagon, if it's all going to tish, there's a referee who can stop the fight. But in the big waves, mate, there's no. If you get tumbled over and you've got 10 meters below all that swirling surf, there's nobody there to go and help, really. Is there? The bloke who might have toned you out, still a long way away. So you are left your own devices a lot there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I get asked that question a lot, what's scarier, what's more dangerous, the two sports. And when you sit down and think about it logically, inside the octagon, it's a relatively safe environment. It's controlled. You've got a referee there who can stop it. Now, they say as soon as you can unintelligently protect yourself, they'll stop it. If you're caught in a submission, you can tap out. And these doctors on standby. It is a safe environment to compete in. Out in the ocean, a lot of these big waves too, they're in such remote locations, off the bottom of Tasmania, off the southwest tip of Western Australia, and again, through Hawaii and Fiji, they're out through reef passes and helps a long way away. So if you're to come unstuck in some of those situations, again, you can't fight against Mother Nature. When you're getting rolled around, the bottom of the seafloor and, you're 20 feet down, you just got to stay calm and do the best you can. There's no point panicking and trying to fight against it, because it just makes your situation a lot worse. And then if things do go wrong, trying to find help and get yourself out of that environment can be pretty tricky as well.
Well, just on that, mate, have you been in this situation in the big surf where you thought, I'm not going to get out of this before actually, obviously it did, but have you got the stage where it's been so bad you go, well, this might be it?
I remember having those thoughts when I was younger a lot. I'd get smashed and I would panic, and I had those thoughts, this is it, I'm not going to get the surface, I'm going to drown, and I'd panic and I'd scramble like a drowning cat, and I'd obviously make it to the surface and survive. But through experience, I've been able to sort of keep those thoughts at bay. But I have had moments where I've had injuries under the water. Like most recently in August of last year, I was surfing a wave here at Cape Solander, and the lip landed on my shoulder as I was trying to come out the barrel, and it blew my shoulder to bits and hit me so hard I thought I lost some of my teeth. And I was rolling around in the water, realizing I've just dislocated my shoulder and I couldn't really swim to the surface, and these rocks and a cliff face pretty close to where you're getting pummeled. And that was a little scenario, that I thought, all right, I've got to stay calm here, and this could get a lot worse if I don't handle it correctly. And so there's been many moments, and with friends too. One of my best mates, Mark Matthews, he's a documentary out on him of his story with injuries and surf injuries, and the way he's battled through those setbacks. And and he's had a lot of injuries in places where you've got to get helicoptered out of there to safety, into hospital. Down at ship's turns, he had a neck injury. And then down the south coast in New South Wales too, had a pretty catastrophic leg injury. And that's kind of what I was, leading to before, to the logistics of getting help after these kind of injuries can be pretty hard to get your head around as well. But, you often... As I get older, I'm trying to be more calculated when it comes to risk. But sometimes in the ocean, it can easily just, clip you on your head. It's you got to always have plenty of respect for Mother Nature, that's for sure.
I think that's a good word, mate, respect for it. Now, you've just been a great advocate to tell me never go into the ocean again. Anyway, but in that, I've played in sport where people get injured. What draws you back? Because, you do a shoulder, and at some stage, at some stage, and I don't know what that age is for you, Richie, but at some stage you've got to say, well, I'm too old to do this. But at the moment, you're not. You've got a long time there. But what draws you back? A sore shoulder, a sore leg, a bit of what keeps drawing you back to the big way?
Yeah, it's like martial arts too. I still love martial arts. I still train as much as I can. I want to compete still. And surfing, I think it's the reason why I got into both sports. It's because I generally love the sport. I'm thinking about it when I'm sitting on the dunny. I'm thinking about it when I'm stuck in traffic. And it's what I've grown up doing. Without the ocean and surfing, I'd be lost in many ways. I find it very therapeutic. Even when there's no waves, getting out there spearfishing or swimming, just being in the ocean, it's always been a place that brings me great joy. So, yeah, I just always want to keep pushing myself as well. I really enjoy that buzz of adrenaline, the anxiety, the fear, all that comes with it. It's a whirlwind of emotions, just like stepping into the cage. But that is addictive, you know, and it keeps coming back. And, you know, to challenge myself, to put myself in uncomfortable situations, you know, in the ocean or in martial arts and seeing how I perform. And, you know, I enjoy that challenge. Last year, I jumped in and made my pro boxing debut, which was something new to me. But, yeah, I did that because it was something I've always wanted to do. I enjoyed the change up in training and, like I said, a different challenge. And I'm looking to do that again as soon as the body gets put back together and the opportunity arises and the timing's right. I'm looking forward to competing again as well. So, yeah, just because, yeah, I love it. And I tell young fellas now, if they're, you know, looking to get in any sport, especially mixed martial arts or big wave surfing, that, yeah, if you want to have a crack at it, you got to do it. Be honest with yourself. Do it because you love it. And, you know, get up on those days where you don't feel like training or you know, and that's what's going to get you and make you know, achieve and get to that level of success that you're hoping. If you're doing it for other reasons, maybe by financial or to impress your peers or whatnot, that'll only get you so far. And when the hard days come, it's that love and that passion that's gonna get you up and get you out of bed. So that's what.
That's good.
Thank God, it's still burning there inside me. And I think as I move forward, I'll probably adjust some of the conditions I go and surf in and adjust some of the competitions I step into in martial arts. Like I said, starting to assess risk differently now as I'm getting into my mid to late 30s. So I'll still compete in some regard and always still be surfing you know, in the ocean as well. But depends on the conditions may change, that's all.
And now, would you class yourself as an adrenaline junkie? Is that part of it? Or is it more than that?
Yeah, I really do love that buzz of adrenaline. I joke about it all the time, you know what I mean? I've always suffered from small man syndrome. I've always tried to impress my peers. So growing up, I was a class clown. I was always the one to put my hand up and said, yes, I'll do this before thinking about, you know, what it is I'm putting my hand up for. I think there's many moving parts to it, but I always loved taking something on that made me feel uncomfortable, maybe that I was scared to do, and then I'll step in, do it, and you know, accomplish something that I was actually scared of going into, and then that's you know, that reward and that feeling of you know, of challenging yourself and, you know, I guess overcoming those doubts was also very addictive. So not only the sense of adrenaline that you feel when you go in there, and that high, that elation that you feel of coming out of big surf or a win inside the octagon, you know, it lasts for months. So even now, I look back on fights or you know, sessions I've had in the water that might have been years ago, and I still get that smile on my face and that little tingle and that buzz of adrenaline. So that's very addictive. And but it's also that mental thing of overcoming fears and performing and achieving goals that you've set. You know, and yeah, sometimes you've got to go through some of the adversity to get there, but that can also be very rewarding as well and quite addictive.
Excellent. Right. Now, from there, and that all makes sense. I can understand that completely. Now, moving into the mixed martial arts, and probably you've come through an era where it's been developing. That there was an interest, and it's got bigger. So, yeah, 2010 Cage Fighting Championship, 2012 Proud Warriors Productions, Australian Fighting Championships, Combat 8. There's been different iterations of it. But have you seen it grow and get bigger? And as a sport, stronger?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, from when I first started really training in mixed martial arts, which was just boxing and Brazilian jiu-jitsu when I first started, the idea of competing in mixed martial arts was so foreign. It wasn't really on our shores yet. Even internationally, it was still pretty underground. There was no real professional element to the sport. It was, but you know, as we kept training in individual sports, opportunities did start to rise. I remember seeing old VHS tapes of the first UFCs coming out of the States. And, yeah, it was just it was just jaw-dropping, you know. There was no weight classes. There was very limited rules. And it was pretty much just like one style of fighting taking on another style of fighting. And, yeah, the idea of actually ever competing in that was laughable. I thought, no way would I ever try my hand at a sport like that. But it grew and changed and evolved so quickly and just it exploded globally. I think it galvanized all the individual martial arts. So it gave an avenue for those martial arts to perform and get on a platform where they could be seen. And then initially to try and prove their martial art to be, the more superior martial art. And then obviously as time grew, everyone realized that the best martial art is a combination of them all. And that's what mixed martial arts is. And obviously the UFC exploding and it gaining popularity. It wasn't long before it filtered across to Australia and they started doing many local promotions like the ones you just mentioned, CFC, Combat 8, Australian Fighting Championships, all those Proud Warrior Productions. They started popping up and giving young fighters like ourselves opportunity to fight. And that's where I thought I'd try my hand originally with no long-term plans or goals or what I may do with the sport. I just want to go in and experience it because I love the training and I wanted to challenge myself and see how I perform inside the cage. And it was every reason I might go in there and freeze up and get my ass handed to me and I'd never return. I wasn't sure, but I wanted to, just challenge myself. And I had a bit of luck in my first fight and won by first round knockout. And again, I was hooked and I love the training. I wanted to incorporate more of the martial arts. Like I said, initially it was just boxing and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But after that first fight, I started to incorporate a lot more kickboxing and wrestling and elements of karate. So yeah, it took off and the sport continues to evolve. I think it's been the fastest growing sport for many years around the world. And now you see it is mainstream now. It is for many years it was frowned upon and, just labeled as, human cockfighting and it's barbaric. And now we're starting to shed that, that stereotype and it's being seen as professional sport and gaining mainstream media and, thanks to the UFC and many other promotions around the world, but the UFC has definitely been the leader in showcasing the sport for what it is. It's just amazing to see where it's at now compared to when I first started. And it's seeing our Aussie fighters. Now we've got a couple world champions. Robbie Whittaker was our first world champ and he's still number one contender in his division. But Alex Volkanovski, both who I've been training partners for many years. And it's amazing to see these local lads, stamping Australian mixed martial arts on the map. And it's great to see it. It's, like I said, ever evolving, such an exciting sport. And it's exciting to see where it's going to go to next.
Richie, you're saying how it's become a mainstream sport. And it's interesting you said before, you said how it's much more regulated. A lot of mums out there would be saying to their son, I don't want you to be a fighter. But you've just talked about how much regulation is to it now, how you actually talked about it being safe.
Yeah, and it was still a long way to go. I still, although I think we have to, the most part, shaken that kind of, human cockfighting tag and, just knuckleheads getting there and beating each other up. There's still a way to go. And there's still a lot of people who criticise the sport a lot. But I think with education and people learning about the sport and seeing what goes involved, not only preparing for a fight and the athletes themselves, but behind the scenes with the officials and how regulated it is, the importance of making weight and all the rules that we do have to abide by, that's going to change. And in terms of parents, not wanting their kids to fight, I totally hear him. I've got a 4-year-old daughter and if she said she wants to step in the octagon and start fighting, I'll be a little apprehensive myself. But like I said, if they love it and they're passionate about it, they're going to find a way with your approval without, I reckon. So you're better off supporting them and trying to be there with them through it. But I've worked for a lot of youth organisations, the local PCYC up here, and myself and a mate who has a Muay Thai gym, Lewis Regis. He has SRG Muay Thai here at Alexander. I have a program called the Back on Track program, where we get a bunch of troubled youth, generally 16 and under, and they're brought to us by the PCYC, and we show them all elements of martial arts, a lot of kickboxing, but it shows these kids who are getting in trouble on the streets or maybe come from troubled home life. The PCC want to encourage them into something positive, where they're mixing in with not just other kids, but adults in classes and And that's had huge success. Now, we all shake hands at the end of the class. They all bow to the instructor. You see kids who come in either with a big chip on their shoulder and their chest puffed out, either getting submitted by a 50-kilo hairdresser or something, and it humbles them real quick. Or you can see a kid walk in who's obviously lacking a lot of self-confidence and after a few sessions and really enjoying learning elements of martial arts, they start to walk a little straighter, and you can see that the confidence they have. And the parents, who some were skeptical at first, have been coming back saying how amazing the results have been and how grateful they are of the program. So it's just I think martial arts as a whole is such a positive outlet for not just the youth, but people of any walk of life, any demographic, any age, but especially young people. It's a great element to have in your life for sure. So, I can understand parents being apprehensive, but if you look into it a little bit and sort of educate a little bit about martial arts, it's such a great thing for kids.
Good, mate. A bit of we forget sometimes the respect, the confidence, and the discipline that goes into any high level sport. And I know with martial arts, there's a whole lot of respect and a whole lot of discipline needed just to go from a white belt to the next belt to the next belt, etc. That word discipline is very much part of martial arts, isn't it?
Exactly. And unfortunately, a lot of those elements just get forgotten about sometimes, because I guess what is brought to mind initially for martial arts, and especially with mixed martial arts, is just the physical violence, or the punching and the kicking and the blood and whatnot. But it's all the stuff, I guess the more traditional elements of martial arts, like the discipline and respect, and they're all very much probably bigger parts of the sport that get overshadowed, because I think the more graphic side of it sort of sells papers or whatnot. Like I said, it's been a blessing in my life for sure. From personal experience, without martial arts, I think I would have found myself in a lot more trouble and not be where I am today. That's for sure. So I've got a lot to thank for martial arts, and it's like I said, for any walk of life at any stage of life, it's a great thing to incorporate.
I want to go back to your upbringing, but first, I just want your opinion. You talked before having a lot of respect for the sea. And, of course, in martial arts, you have to have a lot of respect for the opponent. Mm-hmm. Conor McGregor, we saw him regularly as a great advertisement for the sport from as far as coverage, because he's just got a whole lot of talking happening. But he didn't see respect for his opponent last one that we've seen before.
Sorry, we didn't see as much respect or more respect, was it?
I'm not sure leading into the fight, did he have the respect for his opponent that he actually showed afterwards, but leading into it, that he was in too much bravado, do you think, or how did you see?
Well, it was actually quite a noticeable change in the lead up to a fight with Conor this time. He's been so well known for getting into his opponent's head, for being disrespectful. The Khabib Nurmagomedov fight, when he fought for the title, he got beat. The lead up to that, being a Conor fan, I was actually a little bit, I thought it was a lot, pretty distasteful, a lot of things he was saying. He was trying to get under his skin and he showed a lot of disrespect, and he has done to many opponents in the past. This time around, Dustin Poirier, who he has fought in the past and has a win over, Dustin Poirier is a pretty respectful kind of guy. He's not one to engage in trash talk. But he saw a very humble, well-spoken Conor McGregor in the lead up to this one, showing Dustin a lot of respect. He was very confident in his own right. He was confident he was going to get the job done quite early in the fight, and he said he had the best prep. And so that confidence was still there, but he was giving his opponent a lot of respect. I thought leading into the fight that Conor was going to get the job done. I really liked what I saw of him in the lead-up, physically, mentally, what I was reading. But Dustin Poirier had a great game plan and surprised everyone in the second round. But it was, I noticed, a different Conor. Maybe had Conor been the aggro, aggressive, arrogant man in the lead-up, it could have gotten to Poirier's head, because it has done to a lot of Conor's previous opponents. You could see Conor get in their head. Yeah. But this new, polite, respectful Conor has maybe lost it a little bit of that mental warfare touch. Yeah. And he didn't get the job done this time around, but he's still a phenomenal athlete. He looked great in the first round. But like you said, Poirier just had a great game plan. And then when he smelt blood, he went in for the finish and got it. So hats off to Poirier. It was a fantastic win.
No, the great, mate. That's a very good point there. Now, growing up, surfer, the Bra Boys, the Maroubra Boys, you actually were in the movie, from what I can tell. Yeah. You're a movie star as well. Just tell us about your view of that, because I've seen things that talk well about them. I've seen things yep. against them. How did you see that for you growing up?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I was, for the most part, unaware of what we, I just thought it was home. I was, like I said, I was down at the border. I was from 10 years old. Once they took me in, I was leaving my board and all my stuff at the local surf shop at Maroubra Underground, and Mum loved all the boys because they looked after me. You know, they would lend me wetsuits and surfboards and buy me lunch, and I just loved being down there. They were all the bra boys, and I grew up and, you know, bra boy myself, and I'm still very proud to call myself a bra boy. It was a phenomenal place to grow up. It was loads of fun, lots of mischief. You could find trouble pretty easily. It was a pretty unique place. I always say that it was a pretty testosterone charged environment to grow up in. And then as we got older and, you know, the media, it got the media's attention with the Aberdeen story and all the, you know, some trouble that was going on down there. We're getting in the headlines a lot. It was pretty one-sided to the mainly negative stories and warranted. You know, we weren't angels down there. A lot of the boys were effing up and getting in trouble. But there didn't seem to be any positive stories, which we thought was a little lopsided. And so for the documentary to come out and, I guess, give our side of what the area was about and what the boys were about was good to see. I don't think anyone expected the success of that documentary either. So it definitely seemed to put a bit of a spotlight on the area for a while. Which I think by and all probably had, all up maybe a negative effect on the youth down there, because they could maybe misconstrued some of the messages in that documentary. And there's a few generations below me that, sort of got in a little bit more trouble than they need to. All in all, it was great to get the documentary out there and showcase the area and the history of the place and what we were about, I guess. And it's good that people enjoyed it. And now the place is, SML still live down there on the beach, and it's a great place to be. It's obviously gentrification is spreading pretty wide throughout Sydney. And it's changed a lot, but it's still a great place. I love the community down there. It's been a pretty crazy ride though, growing up down there. When I think back like you mentioned the documentary and all went with it and the times, how it's changed and the generations that's come through. It was never a dull moment, that's for sure.
Well, no, it's a nice segue there, because you're talking about you being in the movies and on TV, and we have been joined by the great, the great, we'd say media guru is the best way to say that. He's 28 years at the Seven Network. Now, I've got this right, and I've got a couple of questions about this, Jim, but firstly, welcome. How are you? Thanks. We finally connect. You're not an easy man to grab. How are you? We haven't got your sound, mate. Sorry, I can't hear you at the moment. Just unmute. Bottom left-hand corner, unmute on the microphone. Not quite yet. We can edit it. We can edit your in and out, mate, so don't worry. So you can tell you the talent in front of the camera, mate. You don't know how to use the camera. That's right. Yeah, 1 minute. Yeah, no worries, mate. Just hold on for a minute. Yeah. Now, did you just follow that, mate? Did you was there a TV show too called The Ultimate Fighters, The Smashers?
Yes, that's right. That was like the UFC have a reality TV show called The Ultimate Fighter. Sure. And I was part of a season where they pitted a bunch of Aussies against a bunch of guys from the UK, and they called it the Smashers. So that was a great experience. We were holed up in a big house for 6 weeks, and we just trained and we've all fought each other. And the winner eventually gets a contract with the UFC. I didn't get the results I'd hoped. I got the semifinals in that series, but Rob Whittaker, he won the welterweights and went on obviously to do amazing things. Didn't get the contract in the show, but I kept fighting outside the UFC and eventually got a contract down at flyweight. So, yeah, it's a great experience. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good. Excellent. And luckily, people have been talking to the great Richie Vass, but also we've been lucky enough to be joined by, I'd say, the media guru, is this one I'm saying. He's been at Channel 7 for 28 years, and he's originally a Sydney boy, I think, but I want to go back to that, but has taken the big step into TGB, one of the big stations in Sydney, and, of course, the big time of Drive Time. Jim Wilson, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Simon. We finally got there. I'm a technological absolute dinosaur, but we got there on the Zoom, which is, it's great to join the chat.
No, great. And say, Richie, we've had a great chat with Richie because he's just, as I sort of talked about, you know, the Sydney people. And Jim, now, what's it like being for years in Melbourne and for years for Channel 7 and taking a big step and going to Sydney and becoming a Sydney radio jock?
Well, I'm enjoying it, actually. It's a nice change. I'm hosting the Drive program, as you mentioned, on 2GB from 3 till 6 every day. And it's been a good move, Simon. I love 7, and I had 28 great years at 7 after starting at Channel 9, actually, back in the mid-80s in Brisbane. And I was born and raised on the Gold Coast, and then I basically went to Brisbane, went to Channel 9 Brisbane, went to Channel 9 Sydney, and then Channel 9 Melbourne, then 7 Melbourne. So I've done the East Coast. I've sort of been the East Coast journeyman. But I love my time at 7, but I felt like, you know, I was 52, and I thought, you know what, the approach was made by 9 to go back to 9 and to host my own radio show. And I thought to myself, well, I've been a long-time contributor on stations like 3AW and 4BC and 2GB, 2UE, but I've never been, I'm a first-time host. And I thought, well, you know what, at 52, why not? Let's give it a crack. And I've always said it would have to be something good to get me away from 7, because I had a great gig at 7, and I had 28 or close to 3 decades there. But this came up, and I thought, yeah, it's a great slot. I love the slot. Things are happening all the time in the three-hour window, and it's been a really, really good change. And I think it's also, as much as I love my sport, it's sort of broadened my horizons. I've gone back to where I basically started in general news. So I still do a fair bit of sport, but I'm interviewing the Prime Minister or the Premier or tackling issues that matter to, you know, Sydney and New South Wales and leading campaigns. And I've only been in the chair for 6 months, but I'm having a ball.
Well, it's good, and that's a good point you talked about, because, you know, we've been talking to Richie about sport and high-level sport. Now, you did that for so long. Was it an easy shift to say, well, and you made a good point, you've broadened your horizon, but to go from, it's not just eccentric, that's always part of Drive, you know, some type of sport, but be able to open that up, you found that was easy, relatively easy?
Oh, it wasn't easy. I found it, like, it's a different craft of television, radio. It's sort of, you know, radio is so intimate and so immediate and one-on-one. You know, TV, there's so much more involved with getting, you know, cameras ready, crew ready, red light goes on, you're down the barrel, you know, you're speaking to 300,000 or 400,000 viewers. Or when I've hosted, like, I've been involved with 8 Olympics and hosted a few, you know, you're going to, you know, millions. But it's a different dynamic being on the radio. It's me and you talking one-on-one, or me and Richie talking one-on-one, and it's very intimate. And and when things happen, it's immediate. And so it was a different craft to basically get my head around, and I'm still getting my head around it. And it's stretched me. It's sort of, I've enjoyed doing the politics, and I've always been, you know, obviously, I read the front of the paper as well as the back. It's nice just broadening it out to be able to go and do stuff that's both, you know, not just politics, but, you know, human interest stuff that I'm interested in. Aussie's doing amazing things, the unsung heroes in our community. With our show, I'm very, very, our production team, you know, we're a Sydney show, we're live, and we've got to do stuff that matters to Sydney in particular and, you know, New South Wales, but also what's happening around the country. But we're there to inform, we're there to have a laugh. But, you know, as my mother always said to me growing up, the key thing is you've got to listen to everyone. And I'm a crap listener in my personal life, just ask my wife. But professionally, you know, you've got to listen to your talent and listen to your audience and bounce off them. And as I said, it's been a different sort of challenge to television. But I'm enjoying the challenge, and I'm learning the caper. But the audience and our listeners have been wonderful and fantastic. They've been so welcoming, and as I said, and the other thing I can do is, you know, rattle a few cages along the way, as far as, you know, funding for medical research, which is very close to my heart. I lost my son Sam to brain cancer at the age of 6, and so. Yeah, I'm very big on medical research.
If there's something you want to promote, and I think, you know, you've, because of that, you've been I know a lot of people know that, or maybe not enough, but you have been pushed for the medical research because of your, this, what happened to you. So is there any specific charity that, or any foundation you want to promote in something like that, please?
Yeah, that's not, that's good of you, mate. I think that research, like whether it be, you know, the St Vincent's Medical Research Institute in Melbourne, the Garvan in Sydney.
Yes.
You know, we've got the best scientists in the world, mate, and we're losing a lot of them because they operate on the smell of an oily rag. They're getting not a lot of funding from the federal government or from governments in general. And so it's not a, I'm not getting on a political soapbox, but I think in a country like Australia, the amount of funding for medical research is pretty disgraceful. And so I suppose even before Sam was diagnosed with brain cancer, I was pretty passionate about medical research. And so whether it be diabetes or stroke, I mean, my wife's father had a huge stroke, so that's something close to our hearts as well. But, you know, brain cancer is the biggest killer of children under the age of 10. And between the Peter MacCallum Institute in Melbourne, you look at amazing researchers that were either losing offshore or they're forced to leave medical research and go into another occupation. I think that's really, really sad because they're geniuses and they bring so much to the table as far as research goes, but because they're not getting any sort of funding or grants or they just can't survive. I mean, their mums and dads, they've got to put food on the table, but a lot of them are just getting paid absolute pittance for really making a genuine difference. So that's why I'm passionate about it. And I feel very strongly about it. And so with the show and on 2GB on Drive, I can rattle a few cages, you know, in Canberra and agitate to make things happen. So, you know, it's not a case of being a, you know, sort of a shock jock or a moral crusader or getting on my soapbox, but it's actually having the ability to actually, you know, get the federal health minister on and ask the questions, why isn't there a bigger slice of the funding pie for medical research? And so that's where this job that I'm doing, it's one of the big joys that I'm getting out of it, that we can actually make difference, you know, make a genuine difference for Australians, you know, whether it be a 6-year-old with brain cancer or a, you know, 35-year-old with type 1 diabetes. We can, it's something that we do a lot on the program that I'm passionate about.
Well, it's interesting, mate, because Richie was talking about his passion. I keep, you know, shaking my head when he said passionate about getting into a huge wave, or passionate about getting into a cage with another bloke going to fight it. You obviously you're passionate about your own career too. And I'm always interested in how people find that passion. But you, media has been your passion, hasn't it?
Yeah, I love it. You know, I've been really fortunate. I get up every day, and I was the same at 7, and every day is different. And you meet different people, you talk to different people, and whether it be talking to Richie or you're talking to you. And, you know, when I was asked to come on this show with you, to speak to one of the, and without, you know, not Mutual Admiration Society, but you gave me a big rap in the intro, but to speak to one of the AFL, VFL's greats and someone you and Justin, I go back a long way with, and you're deep thinkers, and I like having chats with you guys. And I think that my passion for what I do every day, I'm really fortunate, you know, especially with what we're going through now and what we've been through in the last 12 months. I mean, I had a bit of a taste of the bushfires up here too about 12 months ago. And I'll tell you what, you know, for the south coast of New South Wales, and where I've got this small little property up in the Lower Hunter Valley, we were under the pump. And the amount of people that I met, like from the Rural Fire Service, volunteers, everyday Australians who are just basically, you know, protecting us for days on end from these fires that were bearing down on us. It was an eye-opener. And so, again, that's another part of the show or part of this job that I love, that I can speak to those people and tell their stories, because their stories are incredible. We're going to start this new segment on the show every Friday called The Local Aussie Hero. And it's just those people in the community who don't get any – they don't do any credit or the acknowledgement or the accolades, but they're making a genuine difference, whether they're feeding the homeless or saving properties in bushfires or, you know, doing something. And it's amazing the people that we've met so far as that segment's concerned, you know, people who are making a genuine difference to our way of life. And, you know, my passion for the job, I mean, I love my sport, you know that. I've been so lucky over the journey over 30 years to cover 8 Olympics and Paralympics and British Opens and Wimbledons and cricket tours in the Caribbean. And, you know, I've been really lucky. But, you know, I feel very – at 52, I've just turned 53, you know, there's a long way to go. You know, I still get a huge buzz, especially when there's breaking news or a big sporting event or a big sports story or a major political story. I still get a huge kick out of covering it. And, you know, as I said, every day is different.
Yeah, now Richie's under 40, mate. He hasn't come to the dark side of 40. He hasn't come to the dark side of 50 yet. So he's going to go. Have you, as a sports follower, and now I know you've got a whole general stuff, but I'm just talking about to Richie about big wave surfing and you know, mixed martial arts. Have you watched the mixed martial arts, mate? How do you go with it? Because he's talking about how a lot of people see it as violent, but he's talking about how regulated it is. Is it on your list of sports that you'd be talking about?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's next to their own. Well, no, look at Richie. I mean, I think Richie's passionate about it. That's what Richie's passion is. I don't watch a lot of it, but I'll occasionally tune in. Each to their own. I'm not going to sit here. You know, I mean, there's some things that I go, you know, around the world where I go, oh, you draw the line at him, whatever else. But Richie loves it. It's his passion. And I just go, you know, the one thing about sport, and Richie can, you know, I'm sure would agree, is that it's an escape. And especially with what we're going through right now, we all need an escape. And so if that's Richie's passion, great. I mean, Richie might not be as passionate as I am about, you know, brain cancer research because I've been touched by it in my life. Well, we're all different. Imagine if we were all the same, we all agreed. And I say this to our listeners, I could tell when I have an opinion, and my opinion is not always the right opinion. In fact, a lot of times, you know, people disagree. Imagine if we all agreed. What I say to our listeners is, we're respectful in the way that we banter or disagree with each other. And I think that, as I said, I'd be boring if Richie and I had the same interests and the same passions. And that's what makes life interesting, especially, as I said, with what we're going through right now. We all need an out. Yeah. And I think that's now more than ever. And you, Simon, you in Melbourne, I've got a son in Melbourne who went through lockdown last year. And, you know, if you can have an out or an escape, you know, whether it be whatever you're watching on Netflix or if it's a podcast, you know, again, each to their own.
No, that's great, mate. Now, just on it now. Yep, please.
No, I'd say absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's great to have different opinions. I'm a huge Charlie Teo fan too. Spreading more light onto research, medical research of all sorts is very important. But yeah, I've had a little insight into you know, what brain cancers and brain tumors are all about, and I couldn't take my hat off more for bringing more awareness to it, mate. But yeah, hopefully we can turn you a bit more of a fan of mixed martial arts, mate. You didn't seem too eager there to jump on the bandwagon, but it's the sport's grown, and like that massive event you guys had in Melbourne a few years ago when Ronda Rousey shocked the world. I mean, shocked the world, beating Ronda Rousey. I was lucky enough to fight on that card, and yeah, I think slowly but surely, people sort of get a bit more understanding of the sport, and maybe some opinions have changed. But I think you're right, mate. It's great to have different opinions, and whatever floats your boat, yeah, especially in times like this, is important.
Great. You're a super, like, a great athlete. And so I'm not going to sit here. And it really annoys me when people sort of sit and go, oh, no, you're great athletes. You just mentioned some of the stars. I mean, they are great athletes. And so... Mm. Again, and going back to Charlie Teo, Dr. Charlie Teo is someone who was one of the few people when Sam was diagnosed with brain cancer that I met with Charlie, and I know Charlie very well. But Charlie was one of the few people, in fact, I can name him on one hand, who was willing to give it a crack and go, right, okay, let's try and look at our options as far as Sam is concerned. Now, in the end, it was such an aggressive brain tumor, and once it spread throughout his spinal column and spinal fluid, we knew that he was up against it. But Charlie was incredible in that he basically bent over backwards to try to find some option of how he could get, maybe prolong Sam's life. But in the end, but from diagnosis to when he passed away, it was about a 9-month period. So it was quick, you know, it was very aggressive. But I'll never forget Charlie for that. And he's an amazing Australian. And I know the traditionalists and the conservative medical types have sort of raised their eyebrows at Charlie. But as far as, you know, he's saved a lot of lives over the years. He's given people some more years than they could have got. And so the traditional medical types sort of frowned at him. But I go, well, you know, he might be a bit of a maverick. But I go, at least he's willing to, well, he was willing to have a crack with my Sam. And I'll remember that for the rest of my days.
I think it creates great awareness about the, you know, the disease as well. I would have known.
Yep.
Not that I know a lot about it, but I know less if it wasn't for Charlie and getting to know his story and yeah, bringing some light to it and how important it is for more research in that area.
That's fantastic. Now, I want to talk to you about big moments. Now, you've done, Jim, you've done lots of, you did the Big Bash League, the Women's Big Bash League, Rugby League, Tottenham versus Sydney, Tottenham versus Melbourne, but the Olympics. Is the Olympics the big one as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I think hosting the Sydney Olympics was the moment of my career. Like I think the Cathy Freeman moment and the way that Sydney worked, the public transport work, which is a big thing for this city, the volunteers clicked. It all came together. It was an amazing, amazing Olympics and a great experience. And to be in the host chair to watch Freeman and to watch Thorpe, and to watch even Simon Fairweather in the archery win a gold. Like you go, and the beach volleyballers at Bondi, Todd Aston Cook, you go, wow, this, it was something else. And Freeman to me is my favourite sporting moment. And, you know, I think that I look at Perkins in 92, 96, going back to back in the 1500 metres freestyle was extraordinary, in particular Atlanta, because everyone wrote him off.
Yes.
And he was the slowest qualifier. But the Olympics, yeah, there's something about the Olympics. I've done 8 of them. I love the Paralympics as well, mate. I love Kurt Fearnley. My wife says I've got a man crush on Kurt Fearnley. He's just an incredible Australian. But I look at some of my, even when I hosted the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games a couple of years ago, my top 5 moments at those games were all para athletes. And because they basically integrated the able body.
Yeah.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was great. And I think even Melbourne 2006, you know, Kerry McCann, you know, bless her soul. The marathon. I remember stuff from Melbourne. I thought Melbourne was great. Yeah. We do events in this country, and I, you know, the one thing that I haven't done that's on the bucket list is a World Cup soccer, World Cup football, and I reckon the World Cup soccer and football, Simon and Richie, I reckon's almost gone past the Olympics as the biggest global sporting event, and that's a lot from me because I'm an Olympics and Paralympics purist, but I reckon it's almost gone past it as, and I'd love to cover one on the bucket list.
We probably don't realise it in Australia because, you know, we're 26 million, but you go to, you know, you go to Brazil, you go to France, that World Cup is the thing. And the passion, now we talk about the passion in AFL footy, you talk about passion in rugby, but the passion in the world game from those places. And Rich, you talk about your passion for your sports. Passion for those countries, and you think about South America and how big some of the stadiums are and how big the crowd are, it's phenomenal. I think you're right at saying it's the Olympics, World Cup, the Olympics, it sort of goes up there times, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Now, gentlemen, yeah, nice. I'm going to cut this short, not because I want to, but because there's a time limit on doing these. And you know, and you know with radio shows and TV shows, Jim, that there has to be an end. But I'm really glad we both got you because I said we wanted to make it I'm not just a Melbourne person. I wanted to make it Sydney centric. I'd love to maybe get you back another time, either one on one or something, have a longer chat. But Richie, thank you very much. Good luck with your sport. I know we didn't get to talk about boxing. Might talk about that a little bit better. Jim, always great. Yeah. I haven't seen you for so long. And I was really impressed that this bloke who worked in AFL football or sport, you know, but down here, could actually get a gig in Sydney. I thought that was fantastic, mate, very much. So all the best with that for you. Good luck with that. If I'm ever in Sydney, I'll try and look you up. Same with you. Yeah. Fellas, thanks very much for your time. Always say if there's anything you need, we'll always get you a speaking gig if you need one. I think you've got one of the best speaking gigs in the world, Jim. I don't think you need it.
Just download the 2GB app and listen in.
I will, mate. I'm gonna listen. I might even win at some stage. Don't worry.
Yeah, that'd be good. Great talking to you, Simon. Good on you, Richie. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, likewise, Jim. Good to chat, mate. Hey, thanks for having us on, boys.
Good on you.
See you later.
See you, fellas.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, mate. That's great.
That was great. Nice. Yeah.